Hello, welcome back to ESPN Scrum Reset for another week. It's into the final week of the Rugby World Cup. It's Sampras back in Sydney, having made the trip down from Paris. But Christy Doran, he's still set up camp in the French capital. It's cooled off, mate. I can tell you it's absolutely glorious back here in Sydney. I hope you were warm and dry up there last night, because it looked fairly fresh in what was a thrilling game of the second semi-finals at the Stade de France.
Good to join you, Brucey. And yeah, you're right. It has changed. Eddie Jones had kind of said it all year that you're going to see this great brand of running rugby. And we saw that even in the quarterfinals, high-scoring affairs. And then all of a sudden, it just changed. And it's changed over the last week. And we saw what was very much a wet, wintry, winter, Northern Hemisphere kind of style rugby match. And it was a clash of titans, wasn't it? England looking like they were going to do it. 15-6, they moved with an amazing field goal from 46 metres out from Owen Farrell. Looked like he had it, but yeah, the Springboks, wow. What a recovery on Andre Pollard off the back of an almighty scrum. And they somehow win, 78th minute or so, that penalty from 50 metres out. Tommy Hamilton was there. I'm sure that his heart would have sunk a little bit. But I'll tell you what, if you're not an English fan, you're pretty happy with the result.
Yeah, Tommy's timing is impeccable. He's just joined us at the exact moment before we dive into this one. A couple of bits of housekeeping, guys, ladies and gents, before we attack the last week or so. Firstly, an apology from myself on behalf of the crew, just so we didn't get a pot out last week between inner city travel in France, some sickness. I hit the wall on Monday. I think it was the result of 6 weeks on the go and then stopping and Wooshka, you come down with a pretty nasty cold. It's just in time for your 24-hour flight home with a six-month-old. And also just timings with presses and everything last week. So a big apology for not getting you out. A reflection on what was an incredible quarterfinal weekend. And I'm sure you've all listened to various pods of everyone breaking that down, but it was an absolute pleasure to be at those two games in Paris. And Tommy, we'll come straight to you now, mate. Some news virtually breaking as we speak. Some people might have picked it up during the game, that second semi-final between England and South Africa, around an alleged racial slur during the match. Mate, welcome back. Hello to you. I hope you've got a bit of sleep overnight. Do you just want to give us the absolute, the facts as we know it, or the allegation as we know it, rather, at this point in time?
Yeah, it was in the first half. You could hear on the ref mic Tom Curry going up to referee Ben O'Keefe saying that a South African player had used a racial slur against him, and he asked what he should do about it. Ben O'Keefe said, "Nothing, please." We asked Tom Curry about it afterwards. He didn't want to expand on it, but was visibly shaken and seemingly still angry. Dion Davids was asked about it this morning. The South African coach, he didn't comment on it. Steve Borthwick's up a little bit later today. We'll see what he has to say. World Rugby, again, aren't commenting. So we'll see how this pans out. I think that's where we are at the moment. Yeah, so it'll be over the next 36 hours. We'll see if action's taken, or if it's one of these ones where, That's basically it.
Yeah, watch this space one, certainly for the next, I guess, another 24 hours, or sorry, rather 12 hours coming up, in terms of just the timings around the World Rugby citing process and that 36-hour window that exists after the game. So we'll park that one there, but certainly the Times, and I believe the Telegraph have run a story on that so far. Christy, just before we park it.
I just think it'd be, this has got a huge ramifications, because if there was to be some form of suspension, his position in doubt, it's an unwanted distraction with the World Cup final just around the corner. And given Malcolm Marx is no longer there, this is a huge moment in what could be a bit of a change of the feel around the World Cup final against the All Blacks in less than a week.
Yeah, it would be some story to start the week, but we'll leave it there and move on to that game itself last night, gents. You were both there. Look, I'm glad we saw this contest after what happened on Friday night, which I think we all feared was going to be one-way traffic, and it certainly panned out that way. The All Blacks far too good for Argentina, and we'll come to that game shortly. But a real arm wrestle, I guess, is the best way to put the second semi-final. The conditions, Tom, clearly played into England's hands. And when I switched on the TV here this morning at 6 a.m. and saw the wet weather, I thought, this might be just a little bit closer than perhaps I was expecting it to be. And England, credit to them, they were the better team for a large chunk of this match, 60, 65 minutes, played the conditions perfectly. A number of just heroic performances from across their team. Dan Cole and Joe Marler at scrum time, clearly. I thought Tom Curry, when he came off there, he could barely walk, get himself to the sideline. He'd done that much work. Owen Farrell, I've never been an Owen Farrell fan, but I had to tip my hat to him last night and say that was an excellent game from him. And you kind of felt they had that game won, and then just it shifted, didn't it? The momentum laid on, and I was thinking about it today. It was really that Jamie George, that short 5-metre line out that England had after that, I think, Kurtley Aaron's knock on that wasn't straight, and that was kind of the turning point, and South Africa had a sniff, and that's all they needed.
Yeah, I think it's look, England are going to be gutted, I think, for probably 60 minutes over the better team. The bench changed it. So, again, that much vaulted bomb squad were the ones which swung it in South Africa's favour. South Africa got substitutions absolutely spot on. They changed the momentum of the game. Pollard after 30 minutes, Faf at the start of the second half, Willie LaRue. That's basically then the back line from the 2019 World Cup final. Oxenche is just unbelievable. He swung the balance in South Africa's favour. And then, look, the platform which England had in the first half, they won. There were three successful scrums for England. Second half, South Africa won all four. So that's the way of it, really. Marler and Cole were the two props who put in an almighty shift. Like, the amount of carrying that Marler did, scrummaging of Cole, sort of one last hurrah from those two old cart horses. They were brilliant. Like, and they put both of them have been unbelievable servants for English rugby. But look, and England played brilliantly. Like, they played a very restricted, conservative game plan, which was focused around kicking, targeting the high ball. Daly May and especially Freddie Stewart were fantastic. They were tipping the ball back in England's favour. England were rapid to the ruck, smashing box left, right and centre. Courtney Laws again putting a performance of the ages, Atoje as well. And then bomb squad switched it in South Africa's favour. England lost the foothold. South Africa got that try through Schneiman, and then Pollard, just absolute nerves of steel. Like, when he kicked that penalty in the 78th minute, he turned around even before it kind of left his boot. He knew it was going straight through. From there, that's why South Africa are the team to beat, really, in this World Cup, because they got this self-belief and this ability to wrestle games over the line, which I don't think anyone else does. The way they did it against France, the way they did it against England, we saw it in 2019. It's just unbelievable, this mentality they have, this self-belief. And they do it without sort of those leaders on the pitch. So Khaleesi always seems to leave after 55 minutes, but whatever he's done in that time, you know, the self-belief they have is just enough to get them over the line. And again, we saw it yesterday. They won a match which perhaps they shouldn't have done. They did. And that's why they're the benchmark. That's why they're the world number one team in the world. And that's why they're so difficult to beat and why they peak at World Cup. So look, England will be proud. They'll be heartbroken. They'll be, for the next 4 years, they'll be thinking, what if, which is the worst position possible. And for South Africa, they'll look to carry this into the World Cup final against the All Blacks. So that's where we are. Sort of right back to where we started, really, thinking it was going to be a South Africa-New Zealand final at the start of the week. And that's where it's panned out. One game extremely straightforward, one game much closer. I don't think anyone in the world could have enjoyed the game last night. It was way too tense. But it was still, back where we started, really.
Chrissy, maybe a better question for Tom, but you had your mic on and now it's gone off again. So I'll send it to you. What do you think, and maybe Tom, we can chime in as well, a performance like that will have done for, I guess, the Twickenham faithful? We know people haven't been unhappy in London supporting games previously when Eddie Jones, crowds were down, punters were leaving before full time. But this was a real throwback to a gritty English performance that played the conditions well. Kicked superbly, defended stoutly, and as we said, really dominated, you know, three quarters of this match and came up short ultimately. But there was a real, I guess, a performance there for the future, And Steve Borthwick, you know, he's only had a short period, the Six Nations and a few warm-up tests and now the World Cup. But they won five games to get to this point. They've given the defending champions an almighty scare. And you've got to think that things will be looking up for English rugby from here, and that when these players, the ones that are returning, get back for the Six Nations camp in January or February, that they're going to be really keen to rip in.
Yeah, and it's interesting you say that, because shortly after full time, maybe it was because there were some salty Irish journalists that I was sitting quite close to, but they speculated that they wouldn't be surprised if England actually lose next year and struggle in next year's Six Nations. And even Italy could, you never know, challenge them, because what we've seen over the last 6-8 weeks of England is a side that is gritty, that does have a good set piece, that has a phenomenal set piece operator coach in Steve Borthwick. The last night was perfect. The game style was perfect for them, wasn't it? It was just never going to be going further, really, from 10. Alex Mitchell just dominated the first half an hour with his amount of box kicking. The challenge in the air. It was a game tailor-made for Freddie Stewart. His ability, his prowess in the air came to the fore. And that was a clear point of distinction in the first 20 minutes when the Supercocks struggled to retain possession. Barrel and Mitchell bossed it at 9 and 10 off the back of fighting for the scraps, fighting for everything in the air. Their set piece was clearly very good. The Springboks kicked for the corner a couple of times early on, and then Moore didn't get anywhere, did they? They got no bang for their buck there, and it almost kind of reminded you of the Wallabies and how much they struggled whenever they kicked for the corners. I think it's clearly a step forward for England, but they're going to have to expand their game much more beyond that. And I know that you touched upon beforehand the Jamie George line out and the struggles he had with the ball, how slippery it would have been. But to me, the turning point, obviously, when Ox Nish came in on the 49th minute, but immediately we did see that scrum domination. There was a turnover, and then there was a scrum against the feed, and then there was four scrum penalties. And the most significant, clearly, is the one that allows for Andre Pollard to step up from 48 metres. But earlier, in the 60th minute, England could have put the game to bed had they been able to win that scrum on the 5-metre line for after the Kurt Lee Aarons knock on. And if they win that scrum, first one goes down, the second one you see Jamie George pop up after Kyle Sinclair loses the hit. They win that and they manage to go further than 9 points up. They win the game, because as we saw, it was like the one try game, wasn't it? And there's going to be discussion around, is this good for the game? It's almost billed now as a game of good and a game of evil coming up with the Springboks and the All Blacks, the team desired to use the ball against a side that's just going to kick heavy, scrum and more. So that's what I'm going to find really fascinating over the next week, and where England sits on that, and where you know the philosophy of the game that they want to implement going forward is going to be fascinating under Borthwick.
Tom, how do you think Rassi and Jacques need to approach selection this week? That's two fairly torrid games that the Springboks have had to come through. Andre Pollard, another, 45 minutes this time, I think. Marnie Lebok was hooked after the half hour or so. So he's got that many more miles in the legs, if you like. You'd think Faf de Klerk maybe comes back in. Could there be some changes through the pack? There's a few things to consider, because if there was a one kind of thing that came up, the question mark around South Africa being able to go back-to-back, it was this toll that it was going to take on them potentially, given they had such a tough pull with both Scotland and Ireland in there, admittedly, 2 weeks apart. But and then having to win, a quarterfinal against one of the top four, and perhaps this semi-final has turned out to be a greater physical test than clearly we all expected. So there's going to have to be a bit of thinking go into the Springbok selection this week, isn't there?
Absolutely. And you imagine there'll be the usual Razzie circus as well, with plenty of diversion going on. I mean, last week Monday, when we saw Razzie in this bizarre school hall about 30 kilometres north of Paris, he was doing all of his usual Razzie-isms there, where he was planting various seeds, and of course, in the end, nothing changed. So it's a bit like that. Is it Dr. Seuss's Cat in the Hat, where they kind of mess around and then everything's just exactly as it was at the start? I think it's a bit like that. So, yeah, so I think we're going to have, as you can see, I've had about an hour and a half sleep. I'm absolutely shattered, and I'm pretty sure, have I got, yeah, the coffee I had, I don't know where that's gone. So, yeah, all of this is going to happen. So I think, are they going to change anything? I think LeBox, the interesting one, they look far more assured with Pollard there and with Fass. You could see that LeBox last night was just struggling. Like, his kicks weren't right. He was, his handling areas, there was that moment when Courtney Laws chased him down. It was, yeah, he looked sort of young, which is harsh because he's a brilliant fly half, but it just wasn't quite right for him. So you can imagine maybe Andre Pollard coming in. I think the balance of the bench and the starting team last night looked pretty good. I think what you see there is Vermaelen and Khaleesi. I mean, there's some stat last night that Khaleesi's last successful carry was in the Scotland game. Like, that is nuts. We have to check that if that's true, but he's just there as an absolute, like, just, he's world-class in the breakdown and in defence, and that's what he does. And then before you know it, you then bring on Quagga Smith, who seems to be getting quicker by the hour. And then you bring on Snyman, who's 42 feet tall. But I think they've got the balance right, and I don't think we'll see many changes. The interesting dynamics of this whole game is what happened before the World Cup, when the Box absolutely smashed the All Blacks at Twickenham 35-7. It's a different All Blacks team now. It's been referenced quite a lot this week. But equally, that was an absolute hammering there. Like, well, the All Blacks got caught out. It'll be interesting to see how they tackle things and whether they shift things up. But from a Box selection point of view, maybe the odd tweak here and there, but you can, like, when you've got Ox coming off the bench on, say, 50 minutes, it's just the perfect impact sub.
Yeah, and even Bensabet, he gets replaced up to 45 minutes. So, and that was, I remember looking around and people were like, wow, like, was this a side that was panicking? Because they seemed like, you know, they were rolling out the bench much quicker than usual. If you replace an Bensabet, one of the best locks of the last 10 years, far out, what's that say? But it was interesting in the post-match presser, Tony Harper, my boss here at the Ross, at the Raw, he asked Jacques Mebber, how did Money LeBock take the news? And he said, look, we are a side where egos don't come into the equation, and that he recognised that he had struggled. Does that mean he's a bad player? No. Does it mean that he could start next week? He could well start. And that's what he said. So I wouldn't be so surprised if he does. There was almost an element of Carter Gordon around it all in terms of that youthfulness that did come through and perhaps the decision-making. But it's a really difficult one if you're going to then bring in a LeBock when the game is very much in the balance for the last 20 minutes. And who knows how that impacts him from a mental perspective. So I wouldn't be surprised if he starts again, knowing how well that finishing group finished the bomb squad, which now includes all the backs. You can't be surprised, I don't think, if they decide to stick with the status quo. And that also, you know, Vermaelen comes off with Khaleesi at the same time. So some of the forwards that you would expect to be tired after a real slog maybe won't be as tired because they didn't get, you know, they didn't play 80 minutes.
Yeah, some decisions certainly be made in the next couple of days. Gents, it clearly has set up a fascinating final. One of these teams is going to be the first to be four-time World Cup champions. A bit of history there. We know it's, you know, generally regarded as the greatest rivalry in rugby. The Springboks and the All Blacks, such a rich history of tapestry of tests over the years. Of course, the first time they've met in a final since 1995. Last played in a semi in 2015. And of course, had that cracking opening game in the pool stage when they were grouped together in 2019, which the Box bounced back from that loss to go on and win. So another bit of, I guess, trivia this time around is that both of these teams have dropped a pool game this time around, and one's going to go on and win the tournament again. Christy, if we look at the All Blacks, probably don't need to look too much at that game the other night because apart from a fair opening 5 to 10 minutes from Argentina, they just never had the weapons to really worry New Zealand, did they? And once the All Blacks got the ascendancy, they were never going to relinquish it and played some really nice rugby along the way with Will Jordan grabbing a hat trick. But if we I guess take a look at one of the side narratives this week and look at what this game means to Ian Foster, to New Zealand rugby, and I guess the country as a whole, because listeners to this pod will certainly be aware of the decision around Ian Foster last year to let him see out his contract and then to announce that they would be opening the tender process for coaching beyond the World Cup, and Foster opting not to reapply, and Scott Robinson virtually getting the job as a result from there. Okay, it's going to be, if they go on to win it, and perhaps we'll talk more about this next week if they do, but where this kind of leaves Ian Foster in the, I guess, the annals of New Zealand rugby history, if they do go on to win it. But they're playing some really good rugby, clearly, after that defeat by France. They've really clicked into gear. They're not going to get the time and space, clearly, that they had on Friday night from the Springboks. But this is a team that has kind of got that swagger back again.
Yeah, they do have the swagger, and it's all written over someone like a Will Jordan. The way that he took that last try, that third try, where it's a beautiful line that he runs, and then the chip and chase. He had a teammate inside, and he ends up going himself. But it is set up beautifully. How Ian Foster's approaching it, I think he wants to finish the job, doesn't he? I don't think he'll be thinking about beyond next week, and he would be over at this point in time. He's probably got his own thoughts around the New Zealand Rugby Board. What will be fascinating, if they do win it, whether or not he decides to fire away or not, because he's had a couple of subtle kind of, you know, just a little bomb that he's dropped and then walked off by talking around New Zealand rugby boards and not wanting to talk about boards, particularly in the landscape of Eddie Jones or what Rugby Australia might be doing and the Trans-Tasman relationship there. But I think he won't be looking beyond this weekend, and what a way to finish up as well. Like, I was asked the other day, well, what might Ian Foster do after this World Cup? Would he go to Japan? Would he look for another coaching role? He may well just decide to sail off into the sunset. He's been around for a long time, head coaching, assistant under Steve Hansen, for a number of years, the best part of 8 years before taking over. So it wouldn't surprise me at all if he decides to have a couple of years off, and fair play to him. But it's going to be fascinating to see the battle between Rassie Erasmus, and Tom touched upon it before, between him and Fozzie, because Fozzie, in his dry kind of way, I don't think he'll put up with the same sort of shenanigans that other coaches might. He's a guy that's seen a lot. Steve Hansen used to love it, the subtle kind of messages. He's learned it from the best. So we'll see kind of what mind games these two respected coaches offer up.
I think, gents, Tom, I was seeing one of the postscript from Jacques Nienaber was around that the Springboks are probably going to have to score 30 points in this game, in this final, to win it the way the All Blacks have been playing. Is that how you see, if we put the conditions aside and I haven't had a look at the longer-term forecast, is this sort of more around that 30-25 scoreline, do we think, two or three tries apiece? Are the All Blacks playing that well that they will open up this Springboks team now, or is there a sense that, you know, the Springboks can shut them down a little bit better than, say, Ireland did? Christy mentioned Will Jordan there, probably in the form of his life. Fully expect him, he will shift to fullback, you would think, next year when Bodie departs. How do we see this final going? What kind of style of game do you think will be played next Saturday night?
I think it all depends about Jordy Barrett. So if they can get to him, then it's advantage Springboks. So I was chatting to a name drop here for an exclusive feature on ESPN last week with Juan Martin Hernandez, and he said in his mind Jordy Barrett's probably the most influential player in the world at the moment, because if you have the All Blacks with him and the All Blacks without him, they're a completely different team. The ability he has to play multiple positions but equally have that control and poise of a fly half, the pace of a winger, the sort of vision of a fullback all from inside centre, means that it's the most remarkable skill set you can have And I think if the box managed to get to him and managed to nullify that threat, then it could end up being quite a low scoring game, because I just think everything goes through him. Having said that, this projection of 30 points I find quite interesting, because World Cup finals are always nervy, apart from the last one where the box absolutely hammered England. There's normally like a couple of points in it, and they're normally really, really edgy games, like nervous games like we saw last night at the Stade de France. I think it'll end up being much more like that than it will sort of the free-flowing, expansive games we've seen in the past. I don't think it'll be as high scoring as the quarterfinals we saw. One thing I can guarantee is that it's going to be a hell of a lot tighter than that New Zealand-Argentina game. There's no way in hell New Zealand will get that amount of space where Rekio only had half of Paris to dance through. And you had Talea was basically being shown from one Arrondissement to the next. Like, it was just ridiculous. So it's going to be tight. 30 points, it's an interesting target, that, to sort of say that publicly. Because ultimately, if they win 3-0, no one's going to care. So I think it's going to be tight. I don't think it'll be a high-scoring game. I think it's going to be nervy. I think it'll be a load of kicking. There's going to be a lot of set-piece focus. A yellow card could decide one way or another, but I think coming back to the start, Jordy Barrett's key. Get to him, and the Springboks have a brilliant chance.
Christy, I think we're probably safe in guessing that we think Wayne Barnes will get this game as the referee. We're now with England out. I guess Mathieu Reynal, much to the disappointment of Australians, could be in the mix. But with Jaco Pieper clearly South African and also injured, I don't think there's anyone else really on the radar. And I think we all agree that Wayne Barnes deserves to ref a Rugby World Cup final. It's the only thing missing from his resume. Now, does that perhaps suit New Zealand a little bit better, given they've had familiarity with him, the fact that he likes a high ball in play game, usually up around that sort of 30, 38 to 40 minute mark? Is this, you know, a factor that we must consider when looking at this final?
Oh, Bruce, yeah, I think you've answered your own question there. You've set it up perfectly. I think, yeah, absolutely. And I think he does deserve it. He probably should have already refereed one of them in the past. And you're right, he will allow for some liberty at the rack. And I think that's a good thing. I don't think the world wants to watch too many of the tests that we saw last night. As engrossing as it was, I don't think we want to be seeing a one-try kind of game. They're good every now and again, but if you get too much of it, like anything, I thought last night's second semi-final was much more captivating and grossing than the first one, obviously, because it was a complete and utter mismatch. I think you're right in terms of the closer to the 30 points, and the weather might determine it somewhat, but you look at the scorelines of the last couple of years, and they generally have been quite the high-scoring affairs. And we go back to the one in the Rugby Championship earlier in the year. It was 35-20, I think. Yeah. And that was a game where the South Africans left a number of tries out there on the field. We saw how quick New Zealand were out of the blocks. And I think we're more likely to see that sort of game. Both teams really wanting to express themselves, because we know that New Zealand would score tries. The 35-7 drubbing that they got at Twickenham 2 months ago, that I don't think we should be really considering that. And if South Africa were to make a really positive start and blow New Zealand out of the park early, then perhaps some of those demons might come through. But I just see how switched on, how quick they are, how the pace of Richie Mo'unga and Aaron Smith, the control that they play. And we saw all those sorts of factors come to a head on Friday at the Stade de France. And if they play anywhere near that with the amount of quick ball that they'll get, I still don't think even South Africa can keep with them. They're the most explosive team in world rugby, and that's because they can blow sides apart from the 22-metre line all the way to the other end.
Yeah, I'm sure that that defeat in the time-honoured Qatar Airlines Cup, it's probably still stinging the All Blacks, that wonderful trophy that they missed out on there in London 8-9 weeks ago, however long ago it was. But Tom, I mean, just if we look some of the other sidebars in this contest, New Zealand have clearly got a lot of players departing. Retallick, Odie Barrett, Sam Whitelock, clearly the man who, first player who has the opportunity to win three World Cups, and wouldn't that be something? Aaron Smith, another one. And then guys like Richie Mwanga, who may be back at some point. Artie Savea is only going for 1 year, I think, in Japan. And if he doesn't win World Rugby Player of the Year this time around, then we may as well just call it quits on that award moving forward. But there's a lot going on here, isn't there? And just when you think about those two guys, Mwanga and Sevilla in particular, for them not to have a Rugby World Cup win on their resume would just have that little, you know, question mark over the absolute greatness of their careers to this point, where they make it back or not. But I mean, Whitelock, phenomenal effort if he does go on. Retallick, clearly one of the game's all-time great locks. And it's just, I know there was talk of them flying under the radar earlier in the tournament, but they've clearly hit their straps now. And I don't know what you're thinking, but I think they're perfectly poised to finish the job now.
Yeah, I have to agree with you. It was interesting talking to Aaron Smith after the game the other day, where he said he wants to go out on the shield like Richie. And I think that's quite a powerful sort of sentiment amongst this group. They don't want to be one of the groups who left behind, who never managed to win a World Cup. Like we saw in the stands on the weekend, some of the All Black greats who've never had this chance, who never managed to lift a World Cup, who went out in that 2007 quarterfinal. So I think there's almost like the sort of a slight collective PTSD amongst this group of All Blacks, that they don't want to end up being one of the lost generations, the groups who were the classes who sort of didn't have a chance to go out on a high. I mean, so many of them, I mean, they've already won the World Cup, several of these players. But I think that whole theme of it being sort of like the last dance, that overused phrase, but it is for so many of these players. Like, it was something which was driving England, like the likes of Marler, Cole, Kerr, Ben Youngs. This is their last World Cup, probably Courtney Laws. And you do feel that in the All Blacks team. They've been referencing it. And after this World Cup, I think it's 9 of the 23 are definitely leaving, going to pastures new, which means, again, it's time for the new group to come through. And we're already seeing so many of these players featuring. And the future, of course, ominously looks very bright. But it's... it'll be the same on the Springbok side as well. They have players towards the end of their careers. You can't imagine Dwayne Vermaelen's got another World Cup in him, several other players as well. So look, it's a really interesting dynamic, something I find really interesting. And it's going to also be an interesting point for New Zealand, especially with the review which happened before the World Cup, with Foster in the situation there. Obviously he's leaving, Robertson coming in. There's talk of maybe Robertson's going to put pressure on them to potentially loosen their rules on picking overseas-based players, given that half of the All Blacks will be in Japan for the next couple of years. So, look, it's a moment, and it's a moment where there's a sort of emotional energy which almost transcends the occasion, where they already know what they're going to do. They already know how to play a World Cup final. It's just whether that sort of the urgency and the self-propelling belief within the team is going to end up swinging in their favour. And this is what happens when you have a group of players who are looking to sort of end All Black careers, Springbok careers on a high. It's a really powerful emotion, but it can equally freak you out. So I think that's going to be a really interesting subplot this week, how they balance the emotional energy of the whole occasion. And I mean, both teams are very good at that, but it's going to be fascinating.
They're great points, Tom. I just don't think, and just what you mentioned around Scott Robinson and perhaps wanting to loosen up those laws, I just don't think that the All Blacks can do it. New Zealand rugby can't afford to allow for the All Blacks jersey to be secondary behind monetary value and contracts at the moment, given that the fact that, yes, if they go on to win a World Cup, they would have won three of the last four. They can't afford to compromise that, I don't think, going forward. We've seen what it's done with the Wallabies as well, and the destabilising elements that it's allowed and offered up. Yes, it's perhaps worked in South Africa, but it's a completely different landscape, and the longer term ramifications of that, we're still not quite sure how it's going to impact from a cohesion and continuity perspective either.
Yeah, once you open up that door, as we've seen with Australia, it can grow from a couple of players with X amount of tests to five or six players with bugger all tests. Gents, so we better get some tips then for the weekend. Look, having tipped the Springboks before the tournament, Christy, you're already gone, along with Lance Petey, our old boss at ESPN, mate, who I think you're both on Ireland, so I'm still alive.
No. I was on France.
France, right. Oh, there you go. For my credibility, I better stick with the Springboks and hope they get the job done. But yes, Tom, what about you?
I don't know if I tipped it here or if it was just my mind, but I went All Blacks at the start of the tournament.
Okay.
And I hope it's on record somewhere. I also really want to know, Christy, what's going in those shelves behind you? They've been empty the whole way through.
Look, less questions asked and answered, the better. This is the setup here in Poitou, which is in the west of Paris. I don't know what's going on with these shelves, to be honest, but we may do. I'm gonna get back to the prediction, which and I very much thought that Ireland might sneak home over the All Blacks. Clearly, that didn't happen 28-24, and I also thought France would knock South Africa out. That didn't happen 29-28, but I can see New Zealand going on with this. I think their desire to play, win the ball, the hurt from 4 years ago, I think that may be enough. And just the guys that know how to win there, the Crusaders kind of lot where you've got Richie Mwanga and Sam Whitelock, those two is just so influential. And how New Zealand, what decisions they make with their team regarding whether or not Whitelock starts. We know that they've brought Retallick off the bench against Argentina. It will be interesting to see if there's any kind of minor tweaks there. The bench configuration, it'd probably be remiss not to mention how important Tyrell Lomax and Ethan de Groot have been to the All Blacks side. Their scrum is fired, and that clash there will be brilliant. It's probably the two best second rows. New Zealand's only lost two lineouts throughout the entire World Cup. It's an incredible stat. One of them occurred on the weekend against the Argentinians. So, I think that'll be the interesting one. Hopefully the weather doesn't play a huge part, but it's going to be a mouth-watering World Cup final. It's a win for the Southern Hemisphere, isn't it? And it's probably a win even for Super Rugby. And, whatever happens, it means that every World Cup winner since 2007 clearly is going to be from the South. And the one exception worldwide throughout the history is in 2003.
Yes, I'm somewhat surprised we haven't received the email from Sanzar gloating as yet. Maybe it'll lob Monday morning. something to look forward to. Gents, before we just finish up on some Wallabies, Eddie Jones stuff briefly, just what has been the vibe like in France the past week since the hosts have gone out? Has the life been sucked out of this tournament over there? I guess, what are you seeing around the place, and what was the atmosphere like travelling out there over the weekend for these two games?
Yes, it has been sucked out of the tournament. France shirts are 30% off in the shops. Basically, I mean, you could actually breathe on the RER going to the Stade de France yesterday, which suggests that the life has gone out of the tournament a little bit. And it does feel like that, I think. The atmosphere was so flat on Friday evening. It was more lively Saturday evening, predominantly because of the French club booing Ben O'Keefe whenever he was on the screen and Evan Etzebeth. And so there was a bit more life there. And the atmosphere last night was really good, I thought, comparatively. But yeah, I think that the sort of the intensity definitely has now that France are out. And also the fact that Ireland are out, considering they travelled in such numbers. Sure. England have brought over an absolute host of fans as well, but the atmosphere on Friday night, Argentina, New Zealand, once it looked like the All Blacks were going to pull away, the Argentinian fans, who were so brilliant against Wales, were quieter. And it's always like the All Blacks fans just kind of expect to be entertained. So they're quite quiet, apart from when the team's in massive adversity, then they rise up. But it does feel flatter than it did at the start of the tournament, which is a huge thing.
I completely agree. The thing that's got me on both matches, and you guys were there when New Zealand got across the line against Ireland, and you've got Don't Forget Your Roots from the 660, and it's a great band in New Zealand, but geez, it's just got nothing on Zombie, and it just sucks it out. It's the flattest song you've ever heard, and we heard that on Friday night, and it puts people to sleep. They've got to fix that up because it's a shocker, and yeah, I agree. It goes the thoughts there from Tom. It was better last night. It felt better, and even despite the rain and the pretty dreary conditions all day, it was significantly better. But Fortunately, we're going to have a great game of entertainment. Let's hope that the crowd comes to the party too, because yes, it's felt very flat since the French were knocked out in such brutal circumstances a bit over a week ago.
Christy, as we mentioned, you and I was still in France at this stage last week when Eddie Jones fronted the press on the safe ground for him at Coogee Oval on Tuesday. A fairly strong press pack for a rugby presser in Sydney, we must say. I think there might have been a sort of 15 to 20 print and radio and television journalists there, and even half of Danny Widler's head making an appearance, which was wonderful for everyone to see. But we didn't really learn too much more, did we, here from this one? Eddie Defiant once again saying he's still towing that line that he hasn't spoken with Japan, doesn't know where that's coming from. He's committed to Australian rugby, and really the only regret was that he told you among many others to give an uppercut to yourself. So I don't know whether he has given himself that uppercut that he said he would. We're kind of in a bit of a holding pattern now. Does it feel like?
Yeah, we're in limbo, aren't we? And I think we will be for a little while too. And it's a shame. It's been a distraction all the way throughout the World Cup, which has been frustrating for probably everyone, including those that are reading about it, that just sort of either enjoy the World Cup or have some form of hope going forward. But yeah, I don't think we learned a huge amount. It was nice for him to admit that he perhaps got it wrong that day at the airport. I didn't mind it, and I said it right from the outset. I know that some and many have said that it was completely embarrassing for not just Eddie but the Wallabies brand. Perhaps it was, but also it did give some headlines. The joke is very much on him though, and has been for some time. And it's whether or not he feels like. And I know it's been touched upon, whether or not he feels like he's going to have the support, because of the amount of promises that RA did make to him when he came back regarding private equity's always coming in, the ability for Rugby Australia to become more aligned, particularly from a high-performance perspective, but certainly commercially. If those factors in Eddie Jones doesn't think like RA is moving closer to, that could well be the determining factor whether or not he decides to go or not. I don't think we'll find this out for a couple of weeks, and hold your breath. It is a big moment in the game, because as we've discussed and waxed on lyrically about, it's a really important one, not just for the strategic direction, but the next 2 to 4 years is so important. Is there a candidate that could come in quickly? Perhaps there's one or two options, but are they ready made just yet? I don't know if they are. So it's a big moment in Australian rugby history.
Yeah, you and I, along with Tommy Deason and Sam Worthington from Stan Sport, just sharing a bit of a wind-down beer after that excellent weekend of games in Paris last weekend with a former Wallaby of note, talking through some options or lack thereof, and potentially even a high-performance manager, which RA are interviewing for now at the moment. And the cupboard's not bare, but it's not exactly stacked either, so... concerning times, but we'll just have to wait and see how the Eddie stuff sorts itself out first. All right, gents, look, you've got a massive week ahead of you. Can't wait for next weekend. I know it'll be a tough week in some respects, because there's been so much written about already, and you feel like you've got all the big narratives covered once or twice, even three times, but maybe this little bit of breaking news will shift the dynamic a little bit to start the week. But rest up today as much as you can, and set yourselves for a big week, and we'll look forward to reading and reflecting again this time next weekend.